Welcome to the Entertainment Engine.
Hi, I'm Pete Moore.
And my name's Bex Gregory. And together, we are the co-hosts of the Entertainment Engine podcast. We are really excited to share more information about our show.
The podcast is for new and existing creators working in music, film and TV. Weekly, we provide our listeners with information, advice and knowledge to help people navigate a career in the entertainment industry.
Plus, we have fantastic guests from the world of entertainment who share their stories with us, where we learn from their experience of working in the entertainment business, built in with some fun facts along the way.
So be sure to subscribe on your favourite podcast platform.
You can find us on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Google Podcasts, plus many others.
We look forward to welcoming you to the show.
This week, we welcome Wendy Stewart Kaplan. Wendy is well known in the fashion industry as a model and consultant working with major brands including Michael Kors and Eileen Fisher. She's also an author, producer, host of her own comedy cooking show, film producer, documentary maker, gay activist, animal activist, and New York nightlife personality. Wendy has so many adventures and stories to tell. Wendy believes that successful performers must draw from their own life experiences. We really hope you enjoy the conversation we had with Wendy.
Welcome to the next episode of The Entertainment Engine. And today we are joined by a really special guest all the way from the Big Apple, New York, Wendy Stewart Kaplan. Wendy, how are you?
I am excellent, and I'm so happy to be here today. I mean, how cool is this, right? You're in the UK, and I'm in New York City, and here we all are together.
I know. It's amazing. I know technology, it sort of brings us all together.
It's amazing. It's still amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, thank you, first of all, for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to having a chitty chat, as we say, with you today.
Well, no, it's great. And I have to say as well, Wendy, that I lived in New York for a little while, and it's got to be my, other than London, it's got to be my favorite city. So I just wanted to sort of share that with you.
Wow, Peter, thank you so much for saying that. New York's a really special place, and it's hard to put into words, right, the kind of energy that you feel here that's just, even compared to other cities, you know, New York is magical. You feel like you come here and anything can happen. And one of my favorite things about it is the diversity of the city. I love it. We have people, and I'm talking pre-pandemic, right? We had people from all over the world here. Mm-hmm. I love that, you know, because you don't have to leave New York to meet all kinds of people doing all kinds of incredible things. And that's what it's all about for me. And what I want to share with you, I am a native New Yorker. There's not a ton of us around. We've got mm-hmm. a lot of transplants, but I was born and raised here.
Yeah, I think when I had the opportunity to, it was really by chance, really, Wendy. I was doing a lot of music shows and music conferences, and a friend of ours that owned a hotel just off of 42nd Street, and they wanted sort of European people to stay, and that's sort of how we stayed. And they,
oh, I love it.
they looked after us really well. And the one thing that I always say about the US, and even more so with New York, and I even say more so than the UK, anything I wanted to do in New York, to get a meeting or have a chat with somebody, it was always managed to happen. And that's one
yes.
thing that I always am grateful for in New York, because someone will make something happen. Even if it's a no, they say no to you. You always take a meeting and always give you time. And that, I think, is what part we're losing in society, maybe. Mm. I don't know.
Oh my gosh, I totally agree with you. If you want to just come, I love LA, right? But New York compared to LA, you can be sitting there in your house or apartment, rotting, trying to get a meeting with somebody, you know, and everything is so spread out. What you're talking about here, Peter, is, and the thing that I love, I feel like I have control, as much control as any of us can have these days, but at least I have some kind of control over my career. You know, later today, I have a booking I'm going to go to. I have a new client that I'm going to meet with. And here you can just reach out, you can touch people, and you can meet them, and people are up for it. That's another thing. But I do think it's the vibe in the city. That's what the city has, you know. It makes us all want to get out and get together with somebody else, and not everywhere is like that. I don't, what is London like compared to New York? I've been, but not, you know, I haven't done business in London. What's it like?
I mean, there is some great points.
It's magical to a point, isn't it?
It is.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, the theatre and everything, and, you know, the entertainment, and yeah, the history as well.
Yeah.
Really, really positive. I think, yeah, it's very different in terms of doing business, I would say.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more reserved. Everyone's a little bit more conservative, and things take a lot longer as well to get things done. I've always found, I don't know about you, Peter, but it's, I would say you'd probably feel a little bit the same.
I agree with you, Bex. I think the difference between London and New York, New York will want to get things done.
Mm.
London will say they want to try and get things done, and they really, it just can be quite difficult. And to get, sometimes to get to the right people, a lot of people are scared to say yes, Wendy. And I think that's across the UK. You always come up against the UK where, and Becky and I sort of get frustrated with this, where they say we're world leaders in this. We might well be, but when you're small businesses and you're trying to get things on and you're trying to get to the right people, you're always blocked in a certain way, or no, that's not going to work. Well, how do you know? Because we haven't spoken to the right person. And that's probably the one big difference, I would say.
Yeah.
Would you, Bex?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so that makes it, I mean, here in New York, and Peter, you lived here, you know, you can actually get people that will take risks here. People are engaged, okay? They're willing to try things. I'm not going to say that it's not hard to get to the people that make the decisions, because you know what? That is a world thing.
Yeah.
But really have, it amazes me here, you have access to people at your fingertips. You know, I had a new agent call me the other day that has seen my YouTube channel and wants to set up a meeting. So people, it flows easy here, which is, that makes it so great, especially, you know, in the entertainment industry. Okay, because what do we do in the entertainment industry? We reach out, we touch people, we're creative, and it's not... It is somewhat a corporate thing now, okay, but as a creative person, I can tell you there's all kinds of ways to get around that in New York. I mean, seriously, at any given night, you can go and see somebody perform. People will come to see that person. There will be people there that might want to further your career. I constantly feel, I say this, I'm in a permanent state of networking. All right. I feel, and that's how I feel, because I'm constantly meeting people. Now, you can imagine what the pandemic would do to somebody like me. All of a sudden, you know, March 12th, New York shuts down. Oh, my God. Like everything that I'm about. I'm a model. I'm an actress. I'm a comedian. I'm an MC. I'm a filmmaker, camera host. At all the places that I worked at, all the clients I worked with, all of a sudden, it evaporated into thin air. It's very hard for people to understand the impact of what the pandemic was. But I have to share with you guys, being a performer, I had to think quick on my feet. I'm like, no, this is not happening. It's not going to end this way for me, because a lot of performers I know haven't worked in 2 years. Mm. I immediately had to embrace the technological world. And let me just tell you all, that was the hardest thing in the world for me.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm sitting here, I'm talking to a computer, which is what I do now 3/4 of the time. Although God bless, New York is open and we have more live things, many more live things happening. But I still have a portion of my work now is on Zoom. It's on StreamYard. It's going on people's podcasts. It's bringing people on my podcast. But I didn't even have a podcast like 2 years ago. I was just very happy, you know, living my life. You guys are aware I have a book, She's the Last Model Standing. It's a real story of a New York girl, right? Coming to New York in her 20s, the people I met, the places I went. Talk about networking, you know, being able to go to places like Studio 54. You know, March 12th. It's hard for people to wrap their head around it, but that all stopped for me. And then you're left with a great big void. What the heck am I going to do? None of us knew what to do, but I am a Capricorn and I will always land on both feet. And there I was standing in my kitchen And I said to my husband, this is unacceptable. Pandemic or no pandemic, they cannot tell me that everything that I've been doing is stopping. I'm going to create a show. And the first show I created standing in my kitchen was Pandemic Cooking with Wendy. I have 115 episodes of that show. And that show, honestly, I tell people it was born of the pandemic. March 12th, we shut down. March 13th, I was already well on my way coming up with that show, which it embraced everything that I'm about. If you have a chance to go to my YouTube channel, WendyStewartTV.com, Pandemic Cooking with Wendy really shows who I am, what I'm about. I'm in different characters. I travel to different places in the world. I'm in my costumes that I wore theatrically. I'm doing my comedy, all right? I'm sharing with an audience and I'm cooking, kind of, sort of. Okay, I'll lay it out here. It's a comedy show where we cook, but it's really about comedy. But that happened because I am a creative person and I knew I had to reinvent myself.
Yeah, yeah, you
do. That was the first show that I came up with. And, you know, the idea of it was it let me use every single thing that I'm about, my entire skill set. Actually, somebody even said to me, Wendy, it's not a cooking show, it's a drag show. Well, you know what? You can call it whatever you want, but it was entertaining. And that's what I do. I entertain. In my book, She's the Last Model Standing, that book is meant to entertain people. Coming up with Pandemic Cooking with Wendy at the beginning of this pandemic, we got hit so bad in New York, you cannot even imagine. Like a week before they shut everything down, they kept telling us this curve was coming and they would show you this graph and they were telling us we had to flatten the curve. I had no idea what they meant, a graph. I was never good in math. What are they talking about? You know, and you heard rumblings of quote unquote this virus, but unless you were here firsthand, you could not wrap your head around it. And believe me, I've had experiences with virus. I know you read my bio. I worked in Africa. I've been in areas where they had Ebola. I know about pandemics, know about malaria and all these things. And yet I couldn't really understand how this was going to affect me. I thought, okay, they're going to shut down New York. So for a couple of weeks, right, it'll be like a really terrible flu and then everything will be back to normal. I mean, I ask you, could you encompass what this was and what it's done to our world?
No, I don't think anyone could have been ready for something like this. I mean, it was just...
Me doing that show, Pandemic Cooking with Wendy, I actually realized not only was it satisfying me to do it and keeping me out there, right? Because as a performer, how are you going to stay out there when everything's shut? It kept me out there. It let people subscribe to a YouTube channel, which I created at that time. Honest to God, I had another channel with all my travel films on it, Model with a Mission, but it was very different than Wendy Stewart TV, where I started loading in all these episodes of Pandemic Cooking with Wendy. I have to tell you, the best thing that happened from all of this were the comments that I got from people on social media. Oh my gosh, on Facebook, things like so many people were sick. They would tune into that show and it would make them laugh and make them not think about what was happening in the world. I took what was a tragedy in the world, and as a comedian, I took that tragedy and had to turn it into something funny. Now, there were people that said to me, why are you calling your show Pandemic Cooking? There's nothing funny about being in pandemic. You are absolutely right. But you know what? So many people got sick. I wanted to keep them laughing and entertain them. Like, I have one episode, I play a character called Pandemic Pam from Pandemic Airlines. God. I don't know how I thought of this. I had one of those cheap costumes for Halloween. I've got loads of costumes. I had like a flight attendant outfit, but it came from one of those sexy costume stores, you know, too tight, too low, but it was the full costume. And I think it was Pan Am, an airline that hasn't existed for years. You know, it had the little Pan Am hat, the outfit, right? But sexy looking. And I put that thing on And I stood there with an issue of Condé Nast Traveler, and I told my audience, see this magazine, it tells you all the places in the world we can go. But guess what, ladies and gentlemen, we can't go anywhere right now. But you know what? We can go in our minds. And I would take them to places like India or Italy. I would engage them in the dish we were making that day, right? And yeah. always throw in a few interesting facts about the place. Plus, I'm very well traveled. I've been to a lot of these places. So how cool to be able to, you know, share my travel adventures with people or even filmmaking adventures in these places. And again, there I was in my little kitchen in New York. And because I called it Pandemic Airlines, I treated it like if you were flying coach class on the worst airline in the world. First of all, we never left the ground. Second of all of my passengers were completely out of control all the time. I created scenarios where there were people smoking, God only knows what, in the bathrooms. There were unruly passengers that had too much to drink that I would have to handcuff to their seats till the air marshals came. You know, I'm an actress, so I could create this total non-reality, and yet it was a reality, because think about it, you know, in your mind, you can create anything. And that was really the point of the show. And the other point of the show was to help make people feel better. There were people that had what we call long COVID that tuned to this show every day, people that were sick for months. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. So what I decided to do, I got that rocking and rolling, and then, you know, our opening up more or less, it was a partial opening. You couldn't go into the restaurants, but it started in the winter months, right? And you could eat outside. And I don't know if the UK has this, but I call them lean-tos. All the restaurants built these outdoor wooden structures just to keep going, because then they could see all the guests there, but we weren't allowed to have people inside. So my friends that own an amazing restaurant in the village called Pangea, that's where I broadcast from on Wednesdays, they were really struggling. And that restaurant, we had to keep it going. They've hosted people in their cabaret room, like Debbie Harry, you know, Blondie, so many of the performers that you've heard of in the music world. And Peter, they're people that you know, I know, because you're from that world. They were hosted and performed at that space. Well, now they're hurting, right? Because they can't have anyone in their restaurant or their cabaret room. I had this idea when I was sitting in front on a 25-degree day under a heat lamp, ordering food. Yes, it was painful. I thought, why don't I do a live stream from inside their restaurant? This is a brilliant idea to not only call attention to the restaurant, but they were having a GoFundMe, letting people know, hey, you know what, if you can, however much you can give, $5, $10, $25, we need people that used to come here to support us now to get through the pandemic. So it really called attention to what they were. And quite frankly, to be able to broadcast inside, there was nobody else in there. It was myself, my co-host, my producer I brought on the live stream, right? So he wasn't there. So we were being safe, but we were also saying, look at this incredible location that we're at. They're having a GoFundMe. Please remember them. Oh, if you'd like to outdoor dine, the food is really great. And we've got heat lamps. So you see, it was like a commercial for them. And then I would bring on incredible guests, Scott Page from Pink Floyd, Rocky Kramer, who I know you know, amazing. He's on TikTok, amazing guitarist. All of these people were brought on my show. Leland Sklar, world-renowned bass player. In New York, we have incredible journalists like Michael Musto, brought them all on live stream. It was the beauty of being able to do this through the live stream. And my host, Tim Moss, very well-known actor, great interviewer, great host. He's on radio. He's on TV. He and I are similar in our backgrounds, except he's a cabaret artist. I can carry a tune. I tell people I don't really sing, but how amazing that we were able to do this, to bring notoriety to Pangea Restaurant. Well, we started that show in January, and here we are. We're coming up on October. We're there every single week. We haven't missed a beat. And I have to tell you, it's the beauty of the live stream. I can bring on anyone from LA. I can bring on anyone from New York or anyone who's anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And right? Think about it. That is really amazing.
I know.
If you were going to name an upside to this pandemic, if there's anything, it has definitely, in terms of the fact that it is a world pandemic, brought us closer. Live streaming has brought us closer. How incredible for us now to be able to share our cultures with each other, right? I was a guest on a girl who's in an island off of Sweden. What is her life like? So different than mine. Yes, they were hit there, but no, you know, she's on an island off the coast of Sweden, nowhere near hit the way we were in New York, where we had a complete life upheaval. And I love hearing everybody's stories. I'm a storyteller. I love everyone else's stories. So that was another show I came up with. Last July, because if you know about my background, I'm a humanitarian. I'm also not only a huge advocate of the LGBTQ community, I'm a huge player in that community. I was part of a big AIDS organization back in the 80s. That's how many years I go back in advocacy and activism. And we were part of a group called POWERS, Pet Owners with AIDS Resource Service. We took care of the pets of anyone that had HIV or AIDS. Because back in those days, before they had any of the cocktails to manage HIV or AIDS, people were in the hospital all the time. Well, if you have animals, who's going to take care of them? We had 250 volunteers. That's who did it, who would foster care, who would just come over and walk dogs or change litter boxes or things like that. Well, fast forward to now. How could I use my advocacy to make something good happen in that community? So I started a show July a year ago. We're over a year now. I can't believe it. Called Triversity Talk. And the name came from the LGBTQ that I help run outside of the city. It's in Milford, Pennsylvania, but we service New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, definitely the more rural areas where a lot of the issues people go through, they don't have a voice in. So we started this organization. So when we came up with the idea to do the show, the live stream show, it was called Triversity Talk. You can access it, of course, on the Triversity channel on YouTube, or again, it's on that YouTube channel I started, Wendy Stewart TV. And I love doing this show because, again, I can bring on people from all over. I mean, I've had on the filmmaker Flavio Alves, who did one of the first films where almost all the actors in it were trans, A Garden Left Behind, award-winning film. He's an award-winning TED Talk speaker. I've had on lawyers, LGBTQ lawyers that talk about HIV criminalization, that there is criminalization for having HIV or AIDS and not disclosing it, or somebody trying to say, hey, that person made me sick. How do you handle that? If you're trans, how do you handle a name change? Okay. If you're just a regular person and you're in the LGBTQ community, you can come on and talk about housing discrimination, how that affected you. And then there's also all the positive things, right? We've had marriage equality here. You know, people come on and talk about same sex people that have now adopted kids, which is, that's so incredible that they are foster caring. And then we have a program here, Foster Care to Adopt. How amazing. I had two gay dads on from LA and the beautiful children that they were able to adopt through that program. I use my advocacy to raise awareness in the world. So another component of what I do is, besides modeling and acting, I'm a filmmaker. My husband and I have worked in both Cameroon and Ethiopia in very remote places. We make short films to tell the stories of those people there, the tribal people in Ethiopia. Are you very familiar with, I'm sure you have a lot of Ethiopians in London. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But the tribal people, it's a very different existence for them, because we went into areas where, you got to believe me, and when I was there, these are people that some of them are not even using currency. They pay for things with cows, right? Mm. In this day and age, they're still living in villages the same way they did for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. They're painted every day. They're wearing traditional clothing. I mean, if they kill an animal there, they eat the parts of the animal and then they use the skins. They make the most beautiful clothing, headpieces with ram's horns in them, with dried flowers woven in between. So wanted to tell their story. And consequently, besides tribal people, I wanted to tell the stories of what's going on. And I know you all know about this poaching in places like Africa, right? You know, elephants, rhino, those stories are all over the news all the time. But you know what? I was fortunate enough to meet two women at the Explorers Club, of which I am a member. There's 3,400 people in the world, approximately. And it's a club dedicated to exploration. And I am a member. I'm so proud. I always tell people I'm really low on the totem pole. I mean, I'm a little filmmaker. The people that come there, you know, are major people that you've heard about in exploration, like Jeff Bezos, like his brother, going into outer space. The amount of people I've met there that have been to space, I mean, come on, that's crazy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I'll be talking to someone in a cocktail party and I'm like, well, what do you do? Female. And I'm telling her all about my filmmaking and she's like, well, I'm an astronaut. I mean, what do you say to that? I'm at the bar there, right? I'm at the bar there one night and there's a gentleman I'm talking to and I'm telling him about, you know, the tribal people in Ethiopia and what they're going through and how I'm doing a film on primate rescue in Cameroon. And I'm talking and talking. And I said, what do you do? And he said, oh, well, I study black holes. Well, you know, you guys, I'm never at a loss for words, but I have to tell you, I don't even know what to say. What exactly does that entail? So I'm at the Explorers Club one night, and they had these two women that had these rescue centers in Cameroon, 10 hours apart. One was Ape Action Africa, and the other one was Sinaga Young Chimpanzee Rescue. And the women are talking about, you know, the reason people speak at the Explorers Club is to let people know what is going on in other parts of the world, really firsthand. When I talk to people about the bushmeat trade, do you guys know what the bushmeat trade is?
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, a little bit. There's a lot of people that don't have any idea, because honestly, bushmeat, it's not part of our culture at all. You know, because I'm an explorer and I am into all of this, I knew what it was. I understood that bushmeat was when they took a part of an animal that they should not be killing, like a rhino or an elephant. Made for meat. Well, I had heard this was going on in Cameroon, was one of the places. So these two women, Dr. Sherry Speed and Rachel Hogan from Ape Action Africa, they decided to start these rescue centers. Well, what are rescue centers? They would go into the bush themselves, or they would have people bring them baby gorillas or baby chimpanzees that were found in the forest. The reason they're there is the parents were killed and the parents are taken for this bushmeat and to use, you know, beyond bushmeat, right? In China and in the Middle East, they believe in the medicinal purposes of parts of these animals. So you're dealing with very complex situations here. They thought, well, the babies are left. So often the local villagers will bring them the baby, or they will get the babies some way, somehow. And they started these rescue centers. Ape Action Africa now has over 350 primates. That's gorillas, that's chimpanzees, that's monkeys. These animals, this is so hard to explain, can never be released. They can never be released because if they're in the forest again, they'll be killed.
Exactly.
But what they've done in both rescue centers, the second one, Sanagayang, had like 64 chimpanzees. They specialize in chimpanzees. Here's what's so fascinating and why I wanted to make a film. The babies are raised there by volunteers. I met a number of volunteers from the UK, as well as volunteers from Cameroon, all right, that come there and they have to teach these youngsters how to be a gorilla and how to be a chimpanzee. It is really quite fascinating because without the mothers to show them, they can't release them into these little family units, which they have. Mm. And the foster person who lives on site at one of these rescue centers takes them out to the bush and actually has to show them these things without becoming too attached to them. Because, you know, it's very easy. They share 97% of our DNA. It is a job. I could never volunteer in one of these places because I don't know how at the end of the year I could, you know, give that. I was about to say that person, that little person up to go live in a family unit. Now, here's the coolest thing. The family units in both places are around 4 acres. They are surrounded by electric fence, not fence that'll hurt them. It's a very slight shock. And I can tell you, I was electrocuted many times because we were making a film and we would put the, you know, lens in against the fence, right? My husband got to the point where I would watch sparks going off and he didn't even feel anything. It's I'd be like, oh my God. He was like,
what's going on?
20 times today. But the cool thing about it, the enclosures in both places are 4 acres or larger. If you can envision that in your mind, that's a lot of space. And in that space, they have these family units. So once the baby gorilla or chimpanzee has spent the year with the volunteer, you know, the latter part of that year, they're slowly introduced to different families. Now, just because it's kind of like, you know, relatives, you may be introduced to the relative, but you might not like them. So this is a very, very complex procedure where they have to see how it's going to work out. You know, you've got a male chimpanzee that's introduced to a chimpanzee family. The women might like him, but the alpha male chimp that's been running the show there, oh, it could get bad. And I can tell you something about chimpanzees, even in these situations, they will fight to the death. That is a known fact. So you have to kind of like play it by ear, test the waters, see who's going to get along with who. So I thought that that would be an amazing thing to make a film about. And my husband, Alan Kaplan, is the videographer. It's the same person that shoots Pandemic Cooking with Wendy. Oh my God. Okay. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. How far we've gone down the ladder from the bush in Africa to the kitchen in New York. Please, dear God, let 2022 and 2023 be different. But exactly. He's in all these cinematography on it. And one of the coolest things, I love telling people this story. I could not really get that close to the gorillas in Ape Action Africa. They have somebody that a human that is accepted into their family that'll go into the enclosures. His name is Apollinaire. I call him the gorilla whisperer. Mm. He gets these gorillas when they're very young. He can be with them. There is no problem. My husband, they totally love because he wears a black cap. Alan always dresses in black. He to those gorillas, they're probably thinking to themselves, he's another one of us.
Yeah.
Right? Right. Yeah. You know what? But you have to think about that. How are we as people? We like the people that blend in with us. You know, often the outcast is someone that's very different. So he actually blended in. Me, on the other hand, I can, no matter how hard I tried, I would sit there very quietly, talk with a really quiet voice. I wouldn't even make eye contact because they don't like that when they don't know you. So I would sit there talking to these gorillas, and you want to know something? Nothing I did could make a difference. They would start beating their chests, you know, like King Kong.
Yeah.
And they make a clicking sound in the back of their voice that I guess the closest I can describe it as is if you took and hit two pieces of hollow bamboo together. All right. Yeah. And just like really agitated, pacing back and forth. And Apollinaire would come over to me and would say, "You're really agitating them. You need to stand back." So I was never accepted by any of the gorilla families. I have to tell you, the chimps were a little bit more engaging. But we all know, you know, you've heard these stories of chimps that are raised by people and then they can turn on you. I mean, they can literally, they're so strong, tear you apart. There was one particular chimp at Sanaga Young Chimpanzee Rescue. Her name was Carla, and she actually lived with a very loving family. I think they were researchers, and they knew by the time Carla was two, they had rescued her. They found her. Her mother was killed, but they knew they would have to give her up. And they brought her to Sanaga Young Chimpanzee Rescue. Carla was, she got along well with the other chimps, but she was also very imprinted on people. Well, in the case with Carla, I have to share with you, there was something about my blonde hair. And always I wear my hair like up in clips and stuff, because especially when it's really hot and humid, I can't stand it on my neck. My hair clip and my hair completely engaged Carla. And I came to Japan, and she, first of all, I got to tell you, their faces are all different. People don't realize that, just like us. I was about to say to you, it's subtle, but you know what? It's not. Their faces are all different, as human faces are all different. Carla was very pretty, very, very delicate features, very kind eyes. And I came to find out that one of Carla's favorite things was to look in the mirror and admire herself. Can you imagine? She would chimp with her,
wow,
you know, really curly chimpanzee hair and make faces at herself in the mirror and pose in different ways. Carla completely connected to me. I really do believe if I had been in that enclosure, and obviously, you know, there's all kinds of guidelines when you're making a film in a place like that, I couldn't be in the enclosure with her, but I did get the feeling that Carla would have come and sat with me and probably groomed me and gone through my hair. She would sit and look at me and take her chimpanzee hand, which their hands, if you look at the lines on their hands, are like our hands. And she would touch her head where my clip was. And I finally understood. Carla wanted me to give her that clip so badly. That's what she wanted. She wanted me to do that. And she would pat her head in the same place. Can you imagine? Again, 97% of our DNA is, it actually, I would get chills sometimes. It's amazing watching, you know, watching the kinds of things that they did every day, their behaviors. So, you know, me as a person, right, you can tell I have all of these components in my life. And when I think about like what my game plan is, what I'm going to do next, people always ask me that. It's going to be everything. It's every single thing that I'm doing. A lot of people, their world became smaller during the pandemic, you know, with, with isolation, with not seeing people, with not being so creatively stifled. For me, it was just the opposite. I exploded during the pandemic. I never sang before. All right. I never wrote funny parodies before. I am now doing live shows in New York, doing all of that. I am not a fabulous singer, but I'm an entertainer. That's what I do. And I write these funny parodies. I wrote one about the vaccine and how people were about it. Do you know that song Jolene by Dolly Parton?
Oh, yeah.
Vaccine, I'm begging of you, please give me a shot. Vaccine. How many doses do you think you got? And it goes on to talk about, you know, anti-vaxxers that think they're getting a chip in their brain and that You know, they're going to be talked to by higher powers and everything. I mean, it brings up, right, all the political stuff that we went about, but I do it all in a humorous way.
Yeah.
I started performing those shows on stage this Sunday. I just did a show at the legendary Stonewall to raise money against bullying for the for the Tyler Clemente Foundation. His story was very well known. They had made a videotape of him in college, his roommate did, of him kissing another boy, and it was so upsetting to Tyler Clemente, he jumped off the George Washington Bridge. All right. We raise money for the Tyler Clemente Foundation through an organization I belong to, the Imperial Court. It's a non-for-profit. And that song I did. Do you remember the song Tainted Love by Soft Sal?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I wrote Tainted Glove. Don't touch me, please. I cannot stand it when you sneeze. And it's all about finding a glove in the street. I don't know about London, but here in New York, you know, when everybody was wearing gloves in the beginning, people would take the rubber gloves off and just throw them on the ground.
I mean,
it was terrible. So one day when I was walking with my daughter and I had seen like 10 tainted gloves, I came up with the idea for this parody song, Tainted Glove. And it reminded me of Tainted Love by right. You can see that. And the rest is history. I ended up, writing that parody. And right now, I probably have 12 parodies. Those were all written during the pandemic. And I am working on, I do want to do a show eventually called Songs from the Pandemic. This is a time in history that all of us are living through like none other. Mm-hmm. I lived through AIDS, certainly horrible. All right. But we started to get a handle on that early on, knowing that by using barrier methods, you could keep it from spreading. This thing, I mean, thank God we have the injections now. Thank God we have those vaccines.
Yeah.
But these variants, you know, this Delta variant, people here in New York, it's breaking through. The fact that even though they have vaccines, you still have to be super careful. We don't know what is going to be ahead of us. In the United States, I'm sure you all know, we're on a people aren't too happy with us list. Okay, because I forgot what the percentage is now in this country, so I'm not going to quote it. But, you know, here in New York, everyone's getting vaccinated. But you go to places in this country and people are dying and they won't get the vaccine. Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Are you going through that in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, there's still, you know, lots of cases and there are still people that are, you know, that don't want the vaccine. So it is a touchy subject, you know, but it's everyone's got their own views on it and it is a really difficult one. But we're doing our best to keep a hand on everything, aren't we? You know, you've just got to be sensible and use your common sense.
And the thing is as well, Wendy, that everything is sort of opened up really in the UK now. So we've got, you know, big festivals that are happening and big sporting events are happening. So, you know, every week now you've got, you know, all the major football matches, which have got 50,000-60,000 people in.
I also had COVID. I was one of the first round of people.
Oh, wow.
The first round of people that got it. And I lost my smell and taste for 8 months.
Oh, damn. Wow.
And you know what? God bless Facebook. For whatever people can say, pro or con, there was a group on there from the UK. It was a research group that formed on there that was for people like me. And I found it. And, you know, it was run by incredible researchers. And I think it was called the COVID Smell and Taste Group, but it's out of the UK. And bless them for what they did. We signed on from all over the world because a lot of people got sick that March, and no one's been able to explain this, lost their smell and taste for 8 months like I did.
8 months.
That was crazy. Not for a week, not for 2 weeks, 8 months. And Isn't it amazing? And this group on Facebook, these researchers told you how you could, there were actually things you could do to bring it back. There were smell kits that you could buy that were available that had like lemon oil in it and a few other things. Or you could just go out and get these particular essential oils. And it totally worked, but you had to, you know, you had to do it every day. I don't understand what it was in the oils, but it, for some way, connected your olfactory. I'm sure that's the wrong word. If someone's listening, they'll probably call in and say your guest mispronounced the word. But it's what your sniffer does. All right, and then it would also affect like how you tasted things. It's still, honestly, they don't really know. I mean, they know better. People were writing things in that it's, you know, nerve damage in the brain. That's really scary for me to think about. I can tell you, you know, my smell and taste are back. My smell is stronger than ever. And I smell things. Some things I smell differently. I had this cheap laundry detergent that I love called Fiesta. You probably don't even have it where you are. I mean, I don't know where the heck it's made. I mean, it's a huge amount for like $5, which I guess, what is that in pounds? Like $6 or $7 or something like that?
About £3, about £3.50.
There you go. I mean, you got a big thing of it. It made lots of bubbles. I love the smell. I know it was toxic. You know, people are like, that is so cheap. Why do you use that? It's not organic. I just loved it. Do you know, I cannot stand the smell of it now. I had to go out and buy one of those, you know, organic ones that costs a lot of money. But there's something about that organic one that has like a natural orange scent to it. Yeah. And the ingredients are all good. It smells good to me, even dish detergents or the things I clean with. I was the queen of toxic cleaners. I can confess that on here. I just loved any chemical or artificial smell. And that's what's different. I don't like that anymore. I'm buying all this organic stuff. I'm going to go broke, I think.
Yeah.
I know.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so weird, but that's why we're having this conversation today. And I hope when this show plays, there are people that listen that say, oh, gee, you know, that's happening. That's happening for me too. Yes. So, of course, none of this is in my book, although my book is recent. It ended like right before the pandemic, which I didn't look into my crystal ball and know that this was coming. But the stories in my book, which people will love, I was one of the original Studio 54 girls. Mm. And in my book, she's the last model standing, which you can get on Amazon. I love telling these stories. Andy Warhol, everybody knows.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of Andy Warhol, I am having the executor of the estate of Jackie Curtis, one of the Warhol superstars, coming on my show. Joey Preston's coming on, runs the Jackie Curtis estate, big Andy Warhol superstar. And Joe Preston is running the estate because Joe Preston was 12 years younger than Jackie, the adoring cousin and now executor of the Jackie Curtis estate. So you had all these Warhol people, you know, Ultraviolet, Joe D'Alessandro, Jackie Curtis, Candy Darling. They all fell into the Andy Warhol family, which were the superstars. I am at Studio 54 one night. Now you have to understand, even to be able to get in there, and Lord knows I talk about this in my book, I was rejected more times than I care to count till I got it through my head. You can't just look like, you know, Joe Schmo. You got to be different. At that time, I had graduated from college, wasn't a celebrity, you know, was living in the Bronx where I grew up. I was nobody special. I was an aspiring model, not even an aspiring actress then. I worked a million part-time jobs getting my model portfolio together, but I really wanted to go to Studio 54 because I'm going to take it full circle. What I said about New York, you know, the energy and the vibe here, Studio 54 really encompassed that. Studio 54 was a place where a kid from the Bronx like me could possibly reach stardom by the type of people that they met there. There were no boundaries. So I'm there one night and someone comes over and says to me, and I was dancing. Everyone knew that I was a dancer and I would show up in ballerina outfits. You guys don't even ask me why. I have no dance training whatsoever. That was my gimmick, ballet tutus and leg warmers, which that was like very much a style at the time. That movie Flashdance was so well known. You remember Flashdance?
Oh, yeah, iconic.
Really good show. Oh, yeah.
I would dress up like Flashdance. And of course, I would go there in that outfit and get in. And I would dance on the dance floor by myself a lot of the time, you know, because you could do that there. Mm. You didn't need a partner. So Andy sent somebody over, or Andy Warhol sent somebody over to invite me to join them in the VIP area. And he starts talking to me and he says, I've been watching you every week. You know, you dance by yourself. I love your whole look and everything. I'm doing a film. I would love to put you in the film. So, you know how like how dumb you are when you're, you know, in your early 20s and you're like, okay, I'm talking to Andy Warhol. All right. He's asking me to be in a film. So he starts to tell me about the film that he's doing with Joe D'Alessandro and Ultraviolet. And I'm thinking, okay, this is really cool, right? This could completely launch me.
Yeah.
And he's telling me about it. And you have to understand, I was working a million part-time jobs, barely making ends meet. And I said to him, well, how much are you going to pay me? Oh, how dumb. And he looks at me, he said, well, I'm not going to pay you anything to be in the film. It's prestigious to be in one of my films. I mean, I guess I could give you a painting. I think he said small painting. I know it wasn't going to be like a giant soup can or anything. I can give you a small painting.
Wow.
And I looked at him and I said, oh, I don't think I could do that. I really need to be paid for any of the work I do. Oh, God.
Wow.
Well, is history. I never got to be in the film.
Oh.
All right. I was still working a million part-time jobs. And that was the end of me and Andy. But, you know, things coming full circle. Here on my show this week, I have Joe Preston, executor of the Jackie Curtis estate, coming on to, and believe me, Joe Preston knows more Warhol stories than I will ever live to tell, you know? So if you're able to try and tune in, the storytelling on this show is going to be really big.
But the thing is great. Wendy, is saying about irony and actually just, how we never do anything at the time. And then it's 10 years later, you think, why did I not do that?
Yeah.
And I think that comes back to what Becky and I were saying earlier, is that sometimes people just don't want to take a chance, or you just don't know what's in front of you. And then it aspires that, oh God, why did I not do that?
Yeah, and I guess it comes down to probably experience. You were younger as well, weren't you? So, you know, you probably don't think the same as you would do, and, you know, as you get a bit older and things like that. So everything happens for a reason, though, doesn't it? You know, it's all in experience at the end of the day.
Absolutely. You know, people always ask me, I get this question asked all the time, what would you have done differently back in those days? And my answer to that, probably nothing, because when you don't have that experience, and as I tell my daughter, who is that age right now, she's like, how do you do this? How do you just like, you know, every little thing bothers me, Mom, when people do this or that. How is it you're just able to just throw it away or shirk it off? I said, because sometimes it takes decades for you not to give a care.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to evolve to that who I am and what I'm about is perfectly okay. You don't feel that way when you're in your 20s often.
No.
You're very insecure, often intimidated. I know I was, by people that knew more than me. And, you know, I always felt lesser than, all right? Because they say children are born of the town or born of the world. And that goes back to your risk-taking again, Peter. I was born of the world, but my family was born of the town. Right. My family loved living in the Bronx, growing up in the Bronx. My mother wanted to always keep things small. She had stars in her eyes. My mother was on her way to Hollywood to make film shorts. She was a Miss New Connecticut 1935. She was modeling with Lucille Ball at the time, before Lucille Ball was such a famous actress. But my mother had a lot of things happen to her in her life that made her not want to reach out. And me being her child, she didn't want to see me go out there in the world and get hurt. But guess what? When that's in you, I just knew I was getting out of the Bronx. I just knew I was going to be an actress. I was going to be a model. I had very big plans for myself. I knew from the time I was a small child, I was going to go to Africa. Now, how the heck did I know that? I knew it. I remember 4 years old saying to my mother, you know what, people would say to me, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I'm like, oh, I'm going to be a model. I'm going to be a top model. That was my words at the time. We didn't have supermodel. I'm going to be a top model and I'm going to go to Africa. How could I have known that? Yeah, but that was in
me. I know.
Right?
Yeah.
And here we are. We're on your show here today having this conversation. You know, yeah. For anybody listening, I tell them, believe in who you are, all right? You need to have your own personal game plan. Know who the intelligent people are. The intelligent people will never say you should be doing this. They will say, why don't you try this? It might work for you, but you have to try it for yourself. Those are the pieces of advice that you wanna listen to.
Yeah.
We all have our own path. Believe in your path. Believe in yourself, okay? And know that what the universe has in store for you really is the right thing. And I say this with all my heart because it took me a long time to understand that.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And there's one in your bio we were reading, and it's a really, really interesting.
It's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, because you always have said to yourself that you've always felt in your past life that you were a famous explorer. So is there is there one in particular, or
who is it?
Yeah, who is it?
Well, there is. So I'll go back to the Explorers Club. Oh my God! So first of all, I so identify with what women have done in exploration, like Amelia Earhart, like the woman who won the I did a rod. And yeah. I know, you know, I have female friends there that have just done incredible things. I mean, we have people that, you know, spend their time, all their time underwater, learning about whales, spending time in freezing cold waters. They go in submarines. Mm. They go into space. I always say they're hardcore. I am not hardcore. But here's where I am hardcore. I am like Jane Goodall, who to me is my role model as an explorer. Because one of the things we know about exploration at the Explorers Club, you push the boundaries of land, sea, air, or space. Okay, I'm the land person. I'm a Capricorn. You talk about Jane Goodall, you talk about Margaret Mead, another incredible explorer. I love both of them. They are role models for me. Mm-hmm. Margaret Mead went and lived with tribal people and wrote the stories about them and raised awareness in the world about their culture. Okay, I think that studying people like that can bridge the gap between cultures. Yes, we're all about moving forward, but we need to all know where we came from. We can't know about the future unless we understand the past. We need to study cultures, where they came from, and what their traditional beliefs are. I have seen things in traditional religions, as Margaret Mead did, that cannot be explained. You know, here we have fancy names for them. I call it traditional religion. There are people that call it voodoo or magic or any of those things. I will never use those terms. I know that those are the terms most people go by. I will call it traditional religion, and I've seen extraordinary things happen from it, whether it's the person mind making it happen. And even the best scientists will tell you the mind is very unexplored. Okay, so we understand now that maybe things can happen from the mind. So my first explorer would be Margaret Mead. And my second one, of course, and I'm sure you already know, Jane Goodall, for the work that she did raising awareness about the plight of chimpanzees.
Yeah.
What I did was such a small fraction of what Jane Goodall did. People don't understand that living for months in the bush, surviving and you're there to study these behaviors, it's incredible.
It is.
Jane Goodall was actually accepted by these chimpanzee families. And earlier in our broadcast, I talked about the, you know, the chimps dealt with me. I wouldn't say I was totally accepted except by Carla. But can you imagine the chimpanzee families that Jane Goodall studied in the Gombe were totally accepting of who she was and what she's about. The third person, I know I'm naming all women, but you know what? I do think the women really stand out for me because so much you read in exploration, you read about all the men that did, they did incredible things. And I'm the first one to talk about it. Mm. I give tours at the Explorers Club and a lot of the artwork we have on the walls tells the stories of the male explorers, but the females, it's really quite incredible, the dedication, and I want to shine a light on them. Let's talk about Jane Goodall. Has she not raised awareness in the world about the plight of chimpanzees, why we need to conserve them, how important they are? Yes, it's 97% of our DNA. We cannot allow these chimp families to disappear. All right, because everything will be lost if that happens. And she is a person that really brought the plight of chimps to light. And here she is. I mean, my God, she's well into her 80s and she's still doing it. Mm. She can't spend her time in the bush as much, but God damn, she can go everywhere and fundraise. Yeah. And that's what I want to do with the films that we make. Call attention to these non-for-profits as filmmakers. My husband and I, that's something that we can totally do. Mm. We can shine a light on exploration to make a huge difference in the world. Mm. And that's the plan.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, yes. I completely hear that, Wendy. I think it's, you know, really, really cool. And it sort of takes me back to my childhood a little bit because maybe something for you to check out online when you get a chance. There's a zoo where I grew up called, it's basically Howlett's, Port Lyme and Howlett Zoo. And if you Google...
Can you spell that for me? Because I'm writing even as we talk.
Well, if you put in John Aspinall into Google, John Aspinall Foundation owns Howlett's and Port Lyme Zoo, which are basically in Kent in United Kingdom. And John Aspinall founded the foundation for the gorilla. So he's passed away now and his son's taken over. So he was responsible for bringing a lot of endangered animals back into the UK. And sometimes you was lucky enough to, if you went to the park, you would actually sometimes see him go in with the animals, in with the gorillas. And I did a couple of times when I was quite young. And only a couple of weeks ago, Becky and I, we had a visit to a sanctuary where Becky lives on the Isle of Wight. And we had a visit with sort of Day of the Tigers, didn't we? Explain
a bit
of that.
Yeah, it was like a tiger experience and it was fascinating.
Oh, I love
just,
that.
Yeah, it was just great to, you know, with the keepers there and just get to hear the stories and the work that they do is really fascinating and, you know, inspiring as well. You know, how they, you know, they bring these animals from such terrible sort of ways of life and it's unreal. You know, there was the three tigers that we saw and they came from, they were ex circus animals, so they and they were treated terribly. You know, like their claws were pulled out and their teeth were worn down and they were beaten and it was and now the life that they've got, because obviously like you were talking about earlier, they just wouldn't be able to survive, you know, in the wild. So they do a great job to just look after them and care for them. And, you know, it was really, really good, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And the funny thing is, Wendy, is that we sort of had a morning with the tigers and we fed the tigers and they've got a couple of lions as well. And I've never seen how big these lions were. They were
huge,
enormous and absolutely enormous. I mean, just stunning.
Yeah.
And this one lion was standing on the rock in the middle of his enclosure and he just looked like the king of the world.
Yeah,
he
and was the sun just was awesome. Just coming in. It looked like something out of Lion King or something.
Yeah, he was magical. And when you went up close to him, there was like a place where they were sort of get only shut in for when their food's actually going to be delivered. And there was this great big glass panel And I mean, he was so impressive. I mean, just stunning animal.
Incredible.
Yeah.
But when they came to get their food, it was really quite interesting because the lions would go into one corner and the tigers would know. And they had a little bit of a, yeah, didn't they?
They, yeah,
had a
little, they weren't too friendly.
No, they weren't too friendly. No.
That's amazing. See, I've never, so they were enclosures together or tell me what the structure was.
No, they were separate. So it's like an enclosure. Yeah, they each had their separate enclosures.
Yes. But they could see each other, couldn't
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
But that's really interesting because how they were observing each other when they were eating, like what were they thinking?
I mean, the tiger,
one of the tigers especially, we think it was Natasha maybe, she's very curious and very maybe like lead you into a false sense of security that you're her best friend. And when the lions would come out, she just changed and she just bounded at the fence and was just fixated on one of the lions. I mean, they were apart between obviously enclosures, but
they both had
massive enclosures, but you could see that the tiger was a little bit, well, hang on a minute.
Wasn't too sure.
Why are you over there? I'm not too happy about that.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so amazing. Now, this is a rescue center in the Isle of Wight.
Yes.
So all of these animals have a story. I am very pro places like this. And I'm going to give you a bunch of reasons why. You mentioned the circus thing, right? Once those animals are rescued from circuses, and I say this to people, I know a lot of people that say, no animal should be ever in, you know, cage. They should all be released free, blah, 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 blah. I'll tell you why that doesn't work. They can't keep them safe. No. All right. There's not a day that goes by, and I'm telling you what's going on right now because of the pandemic. A lot of people protecting areas in Africa are no longer able to do that because of COVID. You know, they just, everything has fallen apart. We're not even hearing the numbers, but I can tell you the amount of elephants and rhinos during this last 2 years. I don't even want to think about that, right?
No.
So you have people that have rescue centers and you have like the sanctuary that you're talking about in the Isle of Wight that has taken them from circuses or from whatever godforsaken situation. Yeah. A lot of times it's private zoos, all right, where a very wealthy person with a good heart was trying to have this private zoo and the animals were not properly cared for, or the person was not out to do anything mean, but it wasn't good for the animal.
No.
If we don't have these sanctuaries, okay, we have no way of, like, you guys went there. Now you're telling me what an incredible experience it was. You're going to share that with people. Okay, people are going to go there. People are going to donate money. Mm-hmm. And little children are going to be able to go there and see these animals. Lots of little children that may never be able to see them in the wild. Yeah. But maybe one of those kids is going to grow up to be a veterinarian. Yeah. For wild animals, or a conservationist, or somebody that's going to invent something that will benefit these species. Do you understand what I'm saying? If we don't expose, to me, like where you were on the Isle of Wight, what a wonderful opportunity to educate. I wrote it down because if I can ever get there, I would totally love an experience like that.
It was a great day, wasn't it? It was a really good day.
It's really fascinating. And what they do as well, that they kind of like do a day where you're looking around. It's optional, but it's a great tool if you do want to learn about the animals as well, because all the keepers they give like talks. So say it's like a monkey chat about the background of, you know, how they live, their background, and
or the pigs,
yeah, or yeah, or go pigs. To the pigs, to the tortoises, to to anything. So it's the reptiles, we got to see all of them as well. But no, overall it's just a really great thing that there are these sanctuaries that do these things and care for these animals.
I am 100% for that, because I believe in order to keep these species going, especially some of the endangered ones, you all know, I think there's only one white rhino left in the, come on, how the heck did that happen? You know, and maybe if we had all been on it sooner, if we had safe breeding programs, I think, as human beings, we got on that too late. You know, that ship has sailed. We're left with one rhino. That is just beyond sad to me. Again, you know, all the people I know that were very trying to protect elephants, trying to protect rhino, I'm getting a lot less stuff on my email, and there's a lot less out there. You know, the poaching's got to be going through the roof right now. We can't kid ourselves. Mm. All right. So the more animals that are protected, I mean, we will come out of this COVID thing, but I know for a fact, I'm in touch with people over in Kenya from the Maasai people. And just because, you know, people are not asking what happened to tourism. Remember all those incredible safaris where people could become educated and spend money, and the money goes to the people, and the rangers from the villages can protect the animals because now they're making money, right? Win-win situation for everybody. Well, what happened to that during COVID? You're not hearing anything. I'm hearing it from the people I stay in touch with. You know, I don't know what we're going to be left with after this. I really don't. So I think I'm starting to think these sanctuaries are going to end up with more and more animals in them. Because
I think also as well, Wendy, it's going back to the beginning of our conversation. It was something that even with the podcast, you know, with what Becky and I were doing, we wanted to put something back into the community about what
I love that. Thank you guys, by the way. Thank you.
And that was just really our sort of thinking. And I think what frustrates us is that I won't say entertainment doesn't matter, because it does matter, because it puts a smile on people's faces. But I think people get really wound up with it. And there's so many people make decisions about one little thing. And you think, hang on a minute, why don't you just all chill out and actually look at the bigger picture? Because if you can come together like a world society and actually create a drug that, you know, can help people and get rid of this awful virus, then surely people can come together on other things. But they don't seem to want to, or they just can't be bothered, or until the next thing comes along. And it'd be really sad in the next generation or the generation after that don't have the opportunity to see lions, tigers, gorillas.
No. Right.
It's really, isn't it?
No, it's important to bring awareness, isn't it? And just bringing, you know, people on like yourself, because everybody's got a great story to share, and everyone's got different backgrounds, and you're in the entertainment industry, but you've done all these amazing things. It's so diverse. And I think giving people like that kind of information is just so inspiring, and it's going to help the next generation, we hope, that comes through.
Well, the thing is, the way we look at it, Wendy, is that exactly what Becky's saying. Our podcast goes out, and you know, we didn't know what our podcast was going to do, and it's gone really positive, and people really like it. What about if it's the girl or the boy that wants to get involved in entertainment, but then suddenly thinks, oh, I've just listened to Wendy's. Actually, I've got a thing about animals. I might go to my local sanctuary and inquire. You don't know. That could happen, and it could inspire someone to just take the next step, really.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's interesting, because as a little kid, there used to be this wildlife organization for the baby seals. And I can remember I gave like my first birthday money. It was $1. And my mother helped me write out a check from her checkbook. And it was to help save the baby seals. That was my first, as a little kid, introduction. That's cool. To animal rescue. And then of course, as I got older, you know, I could give $2, but I used to, as I got into my teens, into my 20s, I looked at the people that were celebrities, like the Doris Day Animal Foundation. This is where it all started with me. And I thought, how amazing that performers and people in the world of entertainment can really spread the word, because who wouldn't listen to Doris Day, right? She's, you know, as honest as the day is long, and she was everybody's sweetheart, and she loved animals, and she shared, her love for animals with people. So I thought, wow, you know, maybe if I can this has always been what I wanted to do, use my modeling, use my acting, use who I was, to raise awareness for the things I believed in, which are these humanitarian causes. And how ironic that there was a point in my life I thought, Angelina Jolie, you are so lucky. You don't know how lucky you are, because you can go out there and you know, you can raise a gazillion dollars and people will listen to you, and you are going to be able to make a difference in the world. And look at me, I'm not you. What can I do? Well, you know what? It's darn good that I got away from thinking that. Once I got away from thinking that, and I started to make these small films, right? Remember, I'm an on-camera host. I can interview people. My husband's a videographer. He can shoot it. Once we started to work with all of these non-for-profits making these films and then having fundraisers, and they'd show the films and people would give money, it started to occur to me, oh my God, you don't need to be Angelina Jolie. You can just do it by getting your films out there. And then the pandemic happens and I have my podcast and I can talk about all these things on my podcast. And then there's people inviting me to be on their shows and I can talk about these things. And then there's people that get in touch with me on the internet that don't know any of the things that you and I talked about today, but now they're going to want to help. You see, it's a chain reaction. So at the end of the day, I don't need to be Angelina Jolie. I can just be Wendy and I can make a huge difference in the world. And that is what I'm out to do.
Yeah.
Well,
it's amazing.
What can we say to that? Well, I mean, you picking up saying about, you know, Angelina Jolie. I mean, I get up in the morning, look in the mirror and think, well, I'm Tom Cruise, but I'm not, because I'm just Pete. But I've got Tom Cruise's attitude, but apart from that, that's where it stops, really. I don't go and jump. I'm the same height. I probably look a lot better than him, to be fair. But, that's where we're at with it. So I could be the Pete show with Tom Cruise. Why can't we get Tom Cruise on and talk about the animals? Why can't we do that?
Right. Well, the sky is the limit. And definitely talk to Eileen. I think this is a really great idea.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, last of all, Wendy, where can our listeners find out more about you and connect online?
Okay, so I'm going to start with my YouTube channel, which is Wendy Stewart TV. On YouTube, you can find out about all the podcasts I've been on. They're on there. And you can find out about my three shows, Pandemic Cooking with Wendy, If These Walls Could Talk, and Triversity Talk. All three shows are on there. You can watch all the episodes. And thanks to my amazing PR people, World Star Media, it all is neatly organized by Jimmy Starr, because if it were left up to me, I am not technically inclined. Next, you can find out more about me on my Instagram, which is very entertaining images of me. And that's under She's the Last Model Standing. You can go on Amazon and read about the incredible life I've had coming to New York from when I was in my 20s. And my book is called She's the Last Model Standing. You can get it on Amazon. And for those of you that don't want a tangible book, you can order it on Kindle as well. Then, of course, there is Facebook. It's Wendy, W-E-N-D-Y, Stewart, S-T-U-A-R-T. If you want to learn more about our films, it's Visual Journeys, Our Stories on Facebook. And last but not least, you can go to my website for a whole lot of other things. My modeling jobs. My website is www.wendystewarttv.com.
Brilliant.
Wow. That's a mouthful.
Wow.
That's a lot. But thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today, Wendy. It's been absolutely fascinating and really enjoyed learning more about your journey today. It's been great.
And I want to thank both of you. You are delightful hosts. We're obviously all on the same page with what we believe in. And yeah, let's get the word out there. Onward and upward. Keep doing what you're doing. You're fantastic at it. Thank you so much.
No, thanks, Wendy.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Wendy. Thanks very much. And have a great Tiger Day.
Okay, yes. And you too. Bye-bye.
Well, that's all for today's episode of The Entertainment Engine. And thanks for listening.
Join us again next week for more great guest interviews from the world of entertainment. It would be great to have your feedback on the show, so please drop us a message at any time. We would love to hear from you.
So make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favourite podcast platforms so you never miss an episode.
Thanks for listening to the show. And remember to all stay safe.
The Entertainment Engine.